cliffcentral.com.
Julius Malema is the president of the EFF, a party that is contesting the elections in the next couple of days. And of course, this is something that's on everyone's mind at the moment. Everyone is waiting for something to happen. Everybody is waiting for some clarity on which party is going to be, first of all, in control of some of the major metropolitan areas, which parties will have to form coalitions with other parties. There's lots to be discussed, and the EFF are the party at the center of all of this. Many people who are disenchanted with the DA or disenchanted with the ANC will be taking their votes elsewhere, and the party that stands to gain enormously from this is the EFF. So, Commander-in-Chief, nice to have you here. How are you?
Very good, and you, brother?
Are you tired, or you've been working hard?
Yeah, it's very hectic. It's back to back.
You've been running around the whole country.
Absolutely.
You were telling me that just yesterday you were, where were you, in Musina?
Yeah, well, I've been all over the country so far. I've been to Messina, I've been to Malamulele, and the latest meetings take place around 7-8 in the evening with communities.
So it's busy.
Yeah, it's not. There's no time.
Now, everybody's talking about the EFF in this election, just like they did in the previous election. You guys are no longer just the new kids on the block now. You've shown that you can get support well into the Mbuyiseni. You can get support well into the double digits in most places. Are you confident that there may be some of the metropolitan areas that are under contestation now that you may have to make the decision in, that you guys might be the kingmakers in, if not outright winners?
Well, we think that Tshwane, PE, Johannesburg, Ekurhuleni, East London, and most of, if not all, metros, they are not going to be decided over a ballot of elections, rather, because most people in those areas are saying DA is not an option, the ANC is not an option, and some still have doubts on the EFF is a new party. And they are going to try and see if they can give us equal opportunity, which will put those municipalities as hang municipalities, and we have to now come in and decide where the municipality goes.
Now, that's a nice position to be in.
Yeah.
And for a small party, it's a very powerful position to be in. I know your ultimate goal is not to be a small party anymore.
Yeah.
But at the moment, this is a big statement of power and strength.
Yeah, we're going to be kingmakers in most of these municipalities, and it is going to be determined by what type of proposals do parties put on the table. We are not going to just go with a party because it is fashionable. We want a concrete plan on how the lives of our people are going to change, particularly in the township and the rural areas. We need to have a clear program of action. What are we going to do by when? So it must be some form of a working program, and only then we can then agree that we'll go together into a coalition with that particular party.
The last time I had you in the studio, it was just before the national elections, and the EFF were going into it for their first time. And I think you could have been very, very pleased with those results, right?
That's an amazing entry into the place. Well, without resources, with the type of program we're pursuing, the left program, and being a new kid on the block, people doubt everything new. They don't have confidence in such things. But we are happy that more than a million people said to us, we're giving you an opportunity to try and prove yourself. And we did prove ourselves.
Now, I don't want to talk too much about the other parties. I'm sure you don't want to either. It's about what you can offer. But a lot of people are saying, you know, the EFF is still untested as a governing party in a municipality, as a governing party in a province. Do you think this would put off some voters, or do you think that they are willing to give you the benefit of the doubt?
Well, you'll never know until you have given us some benefit of a doubt, because we have been in positions of responsibilities in some of the institutions of higher learning. We have been elected SRC in TEFLOP, in VUT, in UNIVEN, and in many other institutions of higher learning. And we have done exceptionally well in those small institutions. I mean, we promised our kids a free meal in the University of Limpopo. When we take over the SRC, we are offering them free meal, just to demonstrate that we do not make just exaggerated promises. We know that these things are doable and they can be delivered. What you need is a political will. So you will never know what the EFF is capable of if you deny them an opportunity to run one municipality. We are not looking for the whole country. We are looking for some few municipalities to demonstrate the capacity of the EFF and how EFF is going to deliver to our people. But like any other party, if we are given the whole country will be more than happy.
You know, it's interesting. Someone was one of the political analysts was saying to me the other day that when the ANC lose a municipality, at this stage mostly to the DA, but when they've lost a municipality, they never manage to get it back. In fact, their support then starts to decline steadily. So the same would be true probably if the EFF had to gain a municipality from them, they would steadily start to lose and never be able to regain control.
Well, in 2014, they lost 10% at a go. In Gauteng, it's unheard of. It's not something that we expect from a party that claims to be ruling in an excellent manner. The decline in political support is ordinarily between 1-3% through elections, not 10% at the go. And they will never recover it. There is no sign in Gauteng that they are growing. They are gradually declining. They even went to recycle old leaders of the ANC because the new ones have got nothing to offer, which is a sign of a confirmation that they are in a deep crisis. So the EFF's takeover of any municipality will be an official burial of the ANC because it will not recover from such a defeat.
When you look at how the ANC has misstepped and misspoken at almost every opportunity here where they could have had a chance to reinvigorate the party, first of all, do you ever think back and go, I left at just the right time?
Well,
and second of all, do you ever think that this is a party that that could have, things could have been so different for them?
Well, we asked three questions when we formed the EFF. We said, will the ANC self-correct? Should we form an NGO? Should we form a political party to contest political power? And we took a decision to form a political party to contest political power because the ANC will not self-correct. And an NGO was not going to have an impact. The ANC can self-correct. It's now reduced into an individual. These are not two things. Zuma and the ANC are one. And once you reduce an organization into an individual, then that organization ceases to exist. And that's what happened to the ANC, and it will never recover from that. Because you have now created a precedence. Anyone that comes, you must model the party around the individual. And then individuals becomes more important than institutions of the state and the organization itself. So everything you do it to suit an individual. If the individual likes color white, we're going to have to change our colors to white and those type of things. We can't do that.
The individual's family all want to be
You know, that's what he does.
If
any business that comes, it will not succeed if it's not partnering the family. The individual becomes more richer than the state and can even borrow the state money. So that's personal rule. The ANC has reduced South Africa and itself as a party into a personal rule.
Now, many of your critics in the ANC and the DA say that the EFF is so strongly centered around your personality. And look, let's be fair, you're a very, very powerful personality. I've known you a long time. From the days when you were in the Youth League and you just started out under the wings of people like Peter Mokaba, and at that stage also, to a large degree, Fikile Mbalula and some of the other people who you were allied to in the ANC Youth League, your rise has been dramatic, and your personality is a huge part of that. And your ability to talk to people, your ability to understand the political landscape, and now also backed by the fact that you are qualified in many ways that you weren't at that stage too, your personality is a very dominant force in the EFF. What do you say when people criticize you and your party for also being very much centered around you? Look, we all know you've got a strong team of people.
Yeah.
You've got Floyd, you've got Mbuyiseni, you've got Dalimpofu. You've got some very, very capable people in the EFF leadership. But it is you that's on the posters. It is you who started this party.
Well, every party has got a face. And the president of the party ordinarily becomes the face of the party. You have just mentioned individuals who make this party excel and to be what it is. And if you check in the EFF, we try and not promote an individual more than the party. Our T-shirts, for instance, do not have a face of a president. Most of the posters of the EFF do not have the face of the president. We don't have too many songs around the president. So we try by all means to speak more of the party than an individual. And because we don't want to fall into politics of personality cult, because if the individual then self-destruct, the whole party collapses. So we don't want to fall into that. But at a formative stage, you ought to have a person who takes charge, who has to make things happen, who has to drive this car. And fortunately, you know, or unfortunately for others, it has to be me. When the time comes for me to hand over the baton, I'll do that. And I'm happy that the EFF leadership is now assuming its responsibility, and the organization is now beginning to assume a life of its own. The media is the one that is refusing to let go. They always say, Malema's EFF, Malema's EFF.
Yeah.
But the party is outgrowing that. The party is now able to organize itself without Malema being around. Look at the campaign of the EFF. Today we've got all leaders of the EFF running their own campaigns. I'm in Limpopo. The deputy president is in Northwest. National chair is in Eastern Cape. Mbuiseni is in Gauteng. And all of them are running successful programs wherever they are. It's no longer about Malema. EFF program only being successful if Malema is around.
Do you have enough resources, enough funding, enough backing? You know, to run a party is like running a business. You're going to have expenses, you're going to have income. There's a lot of stuff to balance out in that equation. And these older, more established parties, and particularly those with connections to the state, have means and resources that are perhaps not at the disposal of a smaller party. It does put you at a disadvantage.
It's very difficult. It's very difficult because you have to compete at the same level. It doesn't matter whether you have resources or not. The bus company charges you the same amount of money, the stage and sound, the posters, the T-shirts, all of that. You pay the same amount of money that gets to be paid by those who have state connections. And it disadvantages us. The playing field is not leveled. Mm-hmm. The IEC gives more money to those who have majority in parliament. And but with all these little resources, we try to maximize. We try and use EFF resources to the benefit of the EFF, to grow the EFF, to make the EFF have a maximum impact. I mean, we are trying to print now the posters for every candidate. Remember, we're contesting all the wards in South Africa, and it's we're expensive. Trying to print posters for every candidate, small as they are, just to inspire confidence and to say to the South Africans, we are serious about
you are,
a contestation of power.
You are competing in every ward?
Every ward in South Africa, and we're going to be having party agents in every voting station. The problem with the South African business, South African elders, they are all scared and cowards.
They will only support whoever's in power.
You know, if you are not in power, they only speak in corridors that you guys are doing a great job.
And
behind
some of them,
you,
while they might support you, are nervous about being seen to support you.
Yes, they are right? Very scared. And so, including people who we thought they were fearless. I mean, pastors, prophets, all businessmen, they shake. They're so scared. And I never thought people can be so scared. I thought they were scared of the apartheid regime. How can you be scared of a democratic regime which said it fought for all to choose any side politically they wish to choose? Then when
and
you choose sides, you're
scared.
Big
business is
big
scared.
Business,
they're the most scared of all.
Yeah, they are very scared because they are benefiting from all this corruption which is institutionalized in this country.
Yeah. So who do you rely on for most of your
Well,
funding?
We rely on the IEC. We rely on the constituency funding by Parliament. And we also rely on selling our merchandise. But also individual contributions. They don't contribute much. Others do 100,000, 50,000. And if you use it for the right purpose, it has got a serious impact.
I remember I asked at the gathering where you also spoke, I asked Musi Maimane about why they don't say who their funders are. And he had an interesting answer, because I wasn't trying to trap him with it. It's just something I hadn't thought of before. I asked him, why don't you tell us who your funders are? I think everyone wants to know who funds the DA or the ANC or the EFF. And he said something about how these people will be victimized by the ANC if he said who they were. Like, for example, when I think it was FNB had a campaign that the ANC read as being critical of them, and they removed all government business from that bank. So these companies are scared of losing that business as well. And I'm sure with some of your funders, they say to you, here's money, but don't tell anyone.
Well, we don't have a problem of disclosing who our funders are. We said in a press conference our audited financial statements are available for journalists to come and scrutinize them.
You're the only party.
We may not feel comfortable advertising them publicly, not because of funders, but because of our financial position. Because the enemy will know your financial strength and know how easily they can undermine you. But for anyone to see who puts money in the EFF account and how that money is being used,
nothing to hide.
Those books are there. The journalists are more than welcome to come and scrutinize those books. We have a problem relating with cowards. You know, when a person says, they now know I give you money, that sounds so patronizing. And those are the people who are going to, you know, create situations where we'll be owing them for the rest of our life. Remember how I risked my life. Remember how I took risk to fund you guys. And then you are then owing that person for the rest of your life. And we don't want those types of a relationship. We want an open relationship where a person says, well, I've put some money because I believe in what these guys are doing. In the same way, I've put some money in the past in the ANC and supported the struggle. And if the ANC is no longer serving the purpose, I've got all the right to change my mind. So you must never relate with cowards, because they give you money underground and they will want to do underground things with you into the future when you are in power. You are forever indebted to them.
You don't need a master. And I'd be surprised if the ANC's funders were not all people who had already benefited from tenders and from all kinds of underhanded dealings, because who else would want to fund them?
Absolutely. I mean, but the ANC too got money from the people who benefited from the apartheid regime during the days of the struggle. Mm. Those people financed them because they discovered that what they benefited from was not a legitimate government, and they continue to support them post the democratic state, and then they produce their own cronies through the tendering system. And then they stole the money. I mean, they put tenders for water and then charge a lot of money, and then go to the same people who received tenders for water to finance them, the houses, the roads, all of that. So you are fighting the state, actually. You are not just fighting the ANC, because they use the taxpayers' money to fight this political battle. And it comes with territory. So we are not complaining. We are gradually infiltrating them. We are gradually weakening them. And we'll assume a better position. It's just a matter of time.
I don't want to get into the politics of an individual here, but isn't it, despite all the assurances that we have from you in Parliament that you want Jacob Zuma to resign, isn't it to your advantage that he hasn't? I mean, isn't it true that the longer he's there, the worse the ANC will perform and the better the EFF will do?
The longer he's there, the worse the South African state degenerates. It's not good for our country, and it might be good for the EFF. It might get the mileage, but we love South Africa more than the EFF. And Zuma stay into power destroys South Africa. It can build EFF. It can make EFF get votes. It can get the DA to get votes. But it's an unprincipled stand. We have to remove Zuma. It doesn't matter whether Zuma makes us get votes or not, because the country is degenerating and the country is collapsing. We are number three economically in Africa, passed by not so good governance. I mean, Egypt under such a military leadership is not stable. I mean, Nigeria is not a very, you know, model state you'll want to follow.
No, we've got Boko Haram there causing
all
trouble.
Sorts of bad day. They pass what's supposed to be the most normal democratic state, which is a clear confirmation that our crisis is worse than a coup d'etat. Our crisis is worse than a dysfunctional state.
Aren't you concerned, while we're on the topic of the president, that that because he's being backed into a corner and he's steadily starting to lose support in certain very important places, that he won't do something really dangerous, that he won't become, you know, like an animal trapped in a corner and tear the state apart if he has to, just to maintain power and to stay out of jail?
Well, he doesn't have that power. He doesn't control the military. He doesn't control the security forces. South Africa has got a relatively stable judiciary and institutions of the state.
On the judiciary, yes. I saw you once interviewing a judge on the Judicial Services Commission.
Yeah.
You gave this guy such a grilling about his involvement with a businessman.
Yeah.
And I was blown away. Look, I know that there are a lot of people in this country who underestimate you for various reasons, and they've all had to learn a hard lesson.
Yeah.
Because you're still here, and you're growing, and your party's growing.
Yeah.
But to see you take this guy on, I mean, this is a man who wanted to be a judge, and to hear the things you were asking him, this made an older gentleman feel like he was really being squeezed. And you were after the truth.
Absolutely.
You wanted to know that the person appointed to the bench here would be the best possible person, and that they couldn't be subject to someone else's influence.
Well, we need to protect the judiciary. Mm. I was just discharging my duties as a member of the Judicial Service Commission. And like I said, we still have judiciary in South Africa. We still have men of honor and women who are protecting our constitution. We are not ready to compromise this constitution. So whether Zuma is in a corner or not, he won't do anything. The only option Zuma has got is to go back home in Nkandla and then face the charges. It doesn't matter how long it takes. The man is going to be charged. The man is going to be trialed and is going to be sent to jail for a very long time. So it might happen in 2019. It might happen before that. But it will ultimately happen. And
you're confident of that?
It's going to happen because they too want to charge him. They are just scared that he's the president. They too don't like him. They don't like what he's doing.
You must have people who are still friends of yours in the ANC.
Yes, absolutely.
And they must tell you things that sometimes you can and can't say.
Well, there is a lot of disgruntlement. A lot of them, you see, they are career politicians. Most of them are not qualified. Most of them have not been to school. The only thing they know is politics. They've never been in business. Their husbands and wives married them because of their political positions. And if they lose them, they will get divorced. And their lives will be in a mess. So they just stick to those positions, even when they know that what they are pursuing is wrong. They are not happy. So, and this election, actually the ANC performing less than 50% in any municipality is going to be an ammunition enough for them to attack Zuma and say, we are in this mess because of you. So South Africans must empower these ANC people by not voting for them, so that they have a weapon, a solid weapon, to attack Zuma and say, we lost this municipality. We are not councillors today because of you, not because we did anything wrong. We did exceptionally well in Johannesburg, like they claim. They've tried their best, but the man keeps on taking them down. And we need to empower them by not voting for them so that they can remove the man.
I wouldn't be surprised if the Gauteng ANC continues to do badly, which it's likely to do.
They will.
That you will see people knocking at your door, capable people who we have respect for.
Yeah.
There are people in the Gauteng ANC who I have a lot of respect for, who will come knocking on the EFF door and say, hey, how about can I provide services to you?
Well, I still talk to a lot of comrades in the ANC. I still respect them in Gauteng. The good thing with Gauteng is that it's urbanized. People have access to information. People know what's happening. And that's why I spoke about 10% loss in Gauteng. It's as a result of people who are exposed to the naked truth of what is happening in this country. And Gauteng is going to be the biggest loser of all provinces, because Here there is no treating of politicians like they are traditional leaders and some monarch and all. Here they treat politicians for who they are. They take them and say to them, you ought to be accountable. And if you are not accountable, you are not going to get our votes. So Gauteng is going to be the biggest gain of the EFF. I mean, its stats now confirm that the EFF is the fastest growing political party in South Africa, and particularly in Gauteng.
That's terrific. I mean, you must be very pleased with those figures. But
absolutely,
there are obviously some people in this country who still believe that the EFF is maybe not for them. Why would white people, for example, want to vote for the EFF?
Well, a white person must vote for the EFF who believe that we must do away with white supremacy, and who believe that we must do away with racism. They have to firstly accept that they are socialized in a racist manner, and that makes them racist. And therefore, once they accept that they've got that problem, they now have to elect a party that will not see them as white, but as South Africans. And then the party that seeks to elevate black people to the same level where white people are. They are 20 years ahead of us. And if we're not going to empower black people, then we'll never have an equal society in South Africa. The white people who are scared of the EFF are the ones who continue to enjoy privilege, and they want the privilege to continue. And the EFF threatens privilege, and therefore I will not vote for them. So vote for an equal South Africa. Vote for land redistribution and equal property ownership and sharing of the wealth of this country, because it's not sustainable, Gareth, whether you like it or not. There's going to be an unled revolution where the rich will be attacked.
Well, 80% of your population are uncatered for.
Absolutely. And, you know, you've got the inequalities growing. Mm. And those at the receiving end being the black majority, and those who are becoming more richer being white minorities. Mm. It can't be. And they hate the EFF for the truth, because we are not doing anything. We have never assaulted any white person. We have never killed any white person. We have never forced any white person into a train or a flight or a boat back to Europe. All we're saying is that let's share what you have. And they are threatened by that. I met an old man in Polokwane who said to me, he made an offer long time ago that let everyone who owns a property start surrendering and say, look, I've got five. Out of five, I can give three.
There are two things I wanted to ask you. First of all, you mentioned this property thing and how everybody who has more than one property should surrender one of their properties, which is, I mean, that's a place to start. And this wasn't your idea. This is a guy you met in Polokwane.
Yeah.
But I saw Andile Mkhitama, who used to be in your – he ended up – I think he had six properties, and they were all seized by the court because he hadn't paid for them. And Andile was one of those people who used to say, you know, land, land, land. But how come he had six properties?
Well, he can't surrender. No one is surrendering. We ought to all develop a principle that says, I have got so much of land, I will give so much. And once we all agree, then we do that.
Because
you are not going to be turned into a fool where you do it alone.
Yeah.
And even if you do it alone, it will not have an impact. It ought to be some form of a principle that us surrender some amount of property.
You're not saying people must have property just so they can have property. It's something to borrow against. It's something to build a future on. It's something that's yours. It's a piece of the land that is yours.
Yeah.
It's important that everyone feels that kind of ownership, right?
Well, we need to give to the state for state to give to distribute equitably to our people.
Because, of course, the state is still the largest landowner.
I see, so that our people can have some form of property, because property brings dignity.
Mm.
There is no dignity without property.
And, of course, traditional leaders have to play their part in this too, because in much of the rural land in South Africa, it's all owned by trusts that are administered by royal families or by traditional leaders. And they also have to give title deeds to the people who sit on that land.
Absolutely. Anyone who's got the land should give the land to the state for equitable redistribution to amongst our people.
Mm-hmm.
And once we do that, then we'll be resolving the issue of property in South Africa, because poverty is as a result of lack of ownership of property.
Now, does this mean for someone who has a 25 million rand property in Camps Bay, does this mean they must give that up and it'll be valued at the same as a piece of the Karoo that nobody wants?
Well, we need every property, whether 25 million, whether less, let the property be returned. I think that's what the best thing we can do for Madiba, to return the property.
And why would someone give up their 25 million rand house in Camps Bay?
Because we're fighting for an equal society. If I give up this house and it is going to be returned back to the rightful owners of the land, for them to have own property and for them to survive in this country, it helps to grow this country. It helps to create an equal society. Why do you want to own alone a house of 25 million?
It must be nice. I don't know, because I don't have one, but it must be nice to live there.
Well, it will also be nice for those who will take it over and make use of it in a manner that it will benefit the growth of the country.
But who will get it? You see, this is what people, I think, are confused by.
The state will be the custodian of such things. The state will take over the ownership and then redistribute in a manner that everyone else benefit, not the politicians and the politically connected.
But surely the politically connected are the ones who will choose the best for themselves. That's always what happens.
No, the law.
It's happened with the ANC.
The law has to be there. That's why we must remove the ANC, so that we have a proper government which is going to preside over the law, which is not biased to the politically connected, but to the South Africans themselves.
When we talk about racism, this is a thing that comes up all the time in South Africa. And it's clear that the EFF fight hard against racism in every way, shape, and form that you find it. There are a lot of tensions. This year there's been a lot of stuff said on social media. There have been a lot of people who've been very upset, angry, militant about certain things. You know, we've had student protests of every kind. We've got a lot of vocal people on social media. Do you feel the problem's getting better or worse?
Well, I think that the white people who are becoming themselves, they are doing very well. They've been pretending for some time, and now they are becoming themselves. It's good. It helps us to appreciate that we are still sitting with this problem, because there was some reconciliation which was imposed on us without justice. And then when you spoke about anything that was not in line with reconciliation, you were then viewed as challenging Mandela and being unreasonable, and everyone else had to just go into a silent corner, including those who were not happy. Let them call us monkeys, and we now have to take them on and educate them and expose them so that they too come to appreciate that we are not monkeys. But it is more painful for people to think that we are monkeys in silence. We don't even know that they think we are monkeys, and we think they love us. So I like these whites who come out openly and call us anything they wish to call us. And then I like the blacks who are now reacting and saying to them, you are not going to do that, not in South Africa, this is our country, and all sorts of things. So, and now the ruling party also trying to formulate some law to punish those who are, you know, engaged in racist practices. I don't know how that is going to apply. But at least we're doing something about it. It has to be exposed, and people are coming out.
People are being honest with each other.
Let them be honest. The more people start being themselves, the better. It's not trying to polarize society or divide society. It's trying to be honest with one another.
But that's painful, obviously, along the way. We've got to.
Change is about.
Right.
Change is about pain. We have to experience that painful path in order to become a genuine united society. And we're going to have to confront it. We're going to have to expose it. And a lot of those who are coming after us will then begin to appreciate that they don't have to call others monkeys. They don't have to call others all sorts of things. They have to now, you know, treat each other as human beings. And thanks to the social media, because I think that these things have been called even during Mandela's era, but there was no such platforms such as social media where people can express themselves. They were expressing themselves in bars, in beer halls and all that, and it was not catching fire. So now the platform is there. The more they embarrass themselves like that, the more they get educated. I mean, I don't think that woman you are accused of defending in KZN will repeat the same mistake. She should have learned.
Accused of defending her, I certainly didn't.
Yeah, but you came
Did you think I was
you
defending
came
her?
You came across defending her. You know, sometimes you do it unconsciously. You're thinking, well, she's doing this, and because you are white, you now fit into the whole thing that now they are defending each other and all those things. And you can't do away with the fact that you are white. There are certain things that when you utter, they are just going to remind us of your position of privilege. And therefore, you are going to be accused that you are taking such a stand because of your position of privilege. And we're going to come very hard from time to time because we are trying to reconstruct this society. And unfortunately, we're going to have to cross paths. With each other.
I don't mind being told that I'm in the wrong. I don't mind being told by you, especially because you've always been honest. You phoned me when I was arrested for speeding. We've had many discussions about free speech at the SABC.
Absolutely.
To me, I think we're on the same side of this. You would rather have people saying what they say out in the open than hiding it, than talking about it at dinner parties and beer halls, where we can have the honest discussion, as painful as it may be. And for me, I would rather have people who have racist ideas, like Penny Sparrow, saying it, then being banned from saying it, just to protect our feelings, and then nobody wins.
Have to say it. I want them to say it. I want them to.
And all I wanted was for people to keep expressing themselves.
To call us all what they think we are.
You know,
and
I remember
and we engage robustly about it.
You once, when you were still in the ANC Youth League, you said that Twitter was a bad idea.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you know, at that stage, you thought it was a bad idea. You've changed your mind. People can change their minds. You can't be.
I've never said Twitter was a bad idea.
Well, I said.
No. there was a fake account.
Oh.
And the Youth League said, if this account is not closed, then we are going to be forced to shut down Twitter. Because we can't have fake accounts in the name of our leaders. It was not even me. I didn't. But it was the Youth League statement.
That used to be an account that you since took over.
Yes.
It is now you.
So
that's grown very nice. You've got a huge following there.
Absolutely. So. The social media has never been a wrong idea. It's a very good platform, and it helps us to grow our economy. But also, it has created a platform for the voiceless masses of our people to express ourselves. I mean, given the tendencies we see now in the SABC and in the media of censoring things and not covering things, we now have the social media to expose those things. And there is no longer any wrongdoing which can be hidden by anyone, whether at night or during the day. The people are there with their phones to cover those things.
Are the SABC taking EFF advertising?
Well, we gave them the advert. We'll see if they will play it. And I've not heard anything from them so far saying they can't play it. We think they will have to play it. Yeah. And the SABC is in such a mess. It will self-correct with time. That's a good thing with being an institution. You rely on institutional memory. And we hope that it will come out of crisis. It will grow beyond cloudy as an individual. He might think he's a hero there now and do as he wish. There were people who came before him. I mean, Snooki and them, they were there before. They are gone now. And he too will go, an institution will remain. And it will become one of the best institutions.
Well, we hope so.
Yeah.
I'm concerned about some of our parastatals. I'm sure you are too.
Yeah.
SAA under Dudumien. Hlaudi Motsoeneng at the SABC. Eskom, which we hear is influenced by Gupta politics as well.
Well, that guy of Eskom has deeply disappointed me because I thought he was one of the example of a shining black excellence. And to now be in the pocket of the Guptas like that. And the stories that we get to hear about Brian, you know, they are so painful that the Guptas have just destroyed one of the most capable individuals.
Well, everything he did up to now has been tremendous.
You know, and Even when they said Brian could be a finance minister, I had no doubt. I thought he was qualified, was one of the best. But to be captured like that and destroy Eskom to the benefit of the Gupta family, which is connected to Zuma, the SAA by Gugum Dudumieni, the Zuma's friend, destroyed like that. And it's not like these institutions do not have capacity or potential. They do. The problem is individuals who succumb to political pressure because of their friendship with the president and the politically connected families. So we're all worried about those institutions. And all of that can be rescued by the removal of Jacob Zuma from power.
Do you think so? I mean, do you not think that the Gupta's claws are so deep into
mining and business and banking
and everything?
The Guptas are Zuma's phenomenon. If Zuma goes, they will go. And the ANC politicians are like that. They reject people so easily like that. If the person who brought you is now no longer in power, then you also get removed. You are no longer fashionable. I mean, look at the business people who were fashionable during Thabo Mbeki's time. Mm. They are successful business people in their own right, but they are no longer fashionable. Mm. It comes with political term of office. The Gupta phenomenon will disappear with Zuma when he leaves office.
You've lost a fortune of weight. You're in good shape. You're ready to wear those tailored suits and be called president of the country. I mean, this is something everybody's talking about. Does it annoy you that people are so interested in how you look, or that Buyiseni's the people's bay, or that Floyd is looking more powerful than ever? I mean, there's a look going on here.
Well,
even Dali with his different glasses.
I don't get annoyed because it comes with territory. When you assume a public life, you must know that you are going to be critiqued from all different types of life. Mm. But people will look at what you wear, people will look at how you walk, people will look at how you speak, if they'll look at you if you lose weight, if you gain weight. They will talk. They were talking when I was big, they are talking now when I'm losing weight. Losing weight is a good thing because we need to inspire our society. We don't need an obese society, and we in leadership position should try by all means to live a healthy lifestyle to inspire the younger generation. And it's not good to create an impression that obese is a fashionable thing. It's a good thing. Mm. It's not healthy, and it comes with a lot of health risks. And I had an opportunity to eat lunch with Madiba one day when JZ was there, and Mbalula was there, and JZ's daughter Dudu was there. And then Madiba asked them to leave the hall, the dining room. He asked Zuma and them to leave the dining room. He wants to talk to me. And Zuma was very happy that Madiba was going to lash me and call me to order. Mm. And Madiba said to me, if you want to lead our youth and our society, you're going to have to lose some weight.
Really?
Yeah. And you can't lead our people looking like this. And it's one advice which I had to adhere to. It has been difficult. I tried since I was told by Madiba. Now I got married, and the wife is very supportive, and put some measures in place to ensure that we live according to acceptable way of living. And I took it from Madiba himself, who was very obsessed with a healthy lifestyle and gym and exercising and the youth leadership looking very well. Mandela was also there, I remember.
This is quite something, because you mentioned your wife. I mean, she can't see a lot of you at the moment because you're so busy.
Yeah.
So she has to look after the kids herself and that kind of thing, right?
It's not easy. And our marriage is new, you know.
Yes.
You live a
and
person.
Congratulations. I haven't seen you since
thank you.
Married.
Thank you very much. So, but she got into it knowing. I mean, the first question my grandmother asked me when I got married, when I said to her I'm getting married, was, does she know you travel countries? Does she know that you're not going to be home more often because you're my grandson, but I've never got an opportunity to see you more often? and it's going to be worse with her. And I said, she knows, she appreciates the type of work we're doing, and she's very supportive. From time to time, she's the one who says, guys, what are you doing? You guys can't be sleeping on duty. You ought to go and work.
Oh, really?
I mean, we went with her to a Durban July.
Yes. And we're hosted. I saw pictures. By, you both look very good, by the way.
We're hosted in the Vodacom VIP thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then she started fighting with me and we saying that, no, why are you not going that side of the tents? Because there are a lot of people there. Go and campaign there. Mm. Just mingle with people. People must see you. So she's that type.
She's actually forcing you to be even more social.
Yeah, she wants us to be easily accessible, socialize with people, to interact with people, so that we grow this organization. She too believes in the cause and she's very supportive. That's what you need in the family. You don't need your house to be a Baghdad, people fighting you permanently.
Or trying to poison your food.
You know, and poisoning your food and going to Russia for medical care and all those type of things. You don't need that.
Now, Julius, you must be sometimes worried about your own personal safety. I know that this is something that comes up in politics. In KwaZulu-Natal at the moment, there are ANC members killing each other over battles over turf and battles for which faction you're in. Obviously, this is not something you have in the EFF, but there are a lot of people who would be very pleased if you something horrible had to happen to you.
It comes with the territory, it comes with the terrain. More than the killing, I'm worried about the cars. We travel a lot.
Mm.
And we got people to come and help us to drive us around because in as much as you're addressing rallies, you still have got admin to do. You still have an organization to take care of.
And long distances to travel.
And you travel long distances. Mm-hmm. So in between, you're on the phone, you're on the laptop. You have to approve the statements. You have to approve the finances. You have to approve the radio jingle, all those type of things. So we get people to come help drive us around and all that. And they, too, get tired. So more than assassination, I'm just worried about the traveling. We travel long distance and long hours and we don't rest and we don't sleep. And these people are with us as we do those, type of duties. If the ANC wants to kill us or anyone wants to kill us for the ideas we hold, there's no reason to panic. Once you take a posture, you must be prepared to die for it. Don't be a sissy about it and be scared that I can be taken on at any time. I'm not living a reckless life. I secure myself. I make sure I'm safe. But if it happens, let it happen. And I'm not going to be paranoid and preoccupied with the possibility of being assassinated. It comes with the terrain. And if it happens, it will be unfortunate. I thought the maturity of democracy will, amongst other things, mean political tolerance, the ability to tolerate others' views and their right to disagree. And we must protect them to disagree with us. We must protect their right to disagree with us and not kill them for disagreeing with us. That's what maturity of democracy should mean.
Well, you seem happy. You seem like you've got everything lined up. You seem like you're on a real road to victory here.
Absolutely.
I wish you well. It's always good to see you. It's good to see you in such good health. I'm happy that you are pleased with the indications, the polls around the upcoming election. Let's talk again in a short while, and maybe you've got even better news.
Thank you. Thank you very much, my brother.
Julius Malema, Commander-in-Chief, the President of the EFF, on cliffcentral.com this morning. cliffcentral.com.